From WIPR,
this is More Than Words, where we have the mic
and tell stories of our Baltimore,
our streets,
our schools,
our lives,
our future.
For our final More Than Words story, Xavier started out interested in how activists in Baltimore see their work connected to civil rights struggles of the past. He researched and interviewed for his piece and found writing to be an overlooked form of activism. He decided to sit down with one of his favorite authors.
Dee Watkins is a writer from East Baltimore. These days, he's a professor at the University of Baltimore and a writer for the online publication Salon. I wanted to interview Dee Watkins because I felt a connection between us from reading his writings. We often hear about activists around the city doing organizing and policy work. But there are other types of activism around the city, too. Creative people writing, making music, directing films, and doing photography. Dee Watkins is one of those people who's recasting Baltimore with his writing and the impact he has on teens. So welcome, Dee.
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm cooling, man. Good. How are you feeling?
Laid back. Happy to be here. I care about these issues a lot.
Most definitely. Do you feel your writing is a form of activism?
Not activism in the sense of being extra political and restating everything else that everybody knows. You know, every once in a while they come up with a new fact or a new story. What I do is I offer a different level of accessibility to non-traditional readers. So I don't just report. I use memoir and personal essay to connect with people who know these stories, but they don't really get a chance to see themselves in the stories and how those stories actually affect them. I'm working from like a different angle, like bottom up instead of like top down. A lot of things that happen in different activist communities in general, because I see people yelling and fighting and fussing and screaming, and you know, they are passionate and giving speeches with spit flinging out of their mouth, and then they just go home and go to sleep. Like, if you're not doing nothing, dog, like, I don't got time for you. I always ask people, like, yeah, so what are your quantifiable goals? What have you accomplished? What do you think you can accomplish? What can you actually do? What can you deliver?
So in a chapter of your book, The Beast Side, you talk about an experience where you're at a basketball game and you refuse to stand up for the national anthem. Here's a section from the book. So it says, even though I was born in America and my ancestors built its infrastructure for free, I'm not a part of the hour. When they sing, our flag was still there. I feel like the hour doesn't include blacks, most women, gays, trans, and poor people of all colors. How does that correlate to activism as a way as you're resisting something?
One of the points is to help young people see themselves in books. Black people make up 13% of this population, but are like under 1% when it comes to literary representation. So a lot of young black people are opening up books and they're never seeing people that look like them in the stories. They're not reading about them. They don't know. So it's like they're being taken out of the game before they even get a chance to start. So that's one. Two, by using that to get them to read, they're developing those critical thinking skills so that they can actually think in a way that a lot of us didn't grow up or weren't really able to think. They can, you know, they can make decisions. They can develop their own ideas. They can think for themselves. I'm pushing towards the surge of the ability to critically think, because if you can think, then we can work our way out these issues in a different level. When I started reading, I did some things that were less reckless. The more I read, the more calculated my moves are, the more my value system just changes. Like, it just becomes different.
Where do you see the Baltimore public school system today? Is it gaining ground or is it like losing ground?
I'm always inspired when I see students like you, you know, not inspired when I talk to different people who are in not the current administration, but the past administration, because it's like they just don't get it. Like, they don't have any vision. It's like, you know, you got people like me and Wes Moore that wrote, you know, we wrote books that students read in like a couple days. And, you know, but y'all won't assign them. My book's being read all over the city, and I visit all of these classrooms proudly. How can you not use that and capitalize and find a person like myself or like a Tariq Torre or a Kandani Fidel? Like, why you can't find these people and partner with them and build these alliances that'd be great for students? Like, we right in front of your face. You spending all this money on the Crucible. No disrespect to the Crucible. Go to Patterson. Mm-hmm. Go to Reach. Go to digital, go to all of these different schools, Dunbar, ask them students, do they read the cook-up or the B-side, and see what they tell you. See what they tell you. I understand getting someone to read something outside of their comfort zone, but I also understand and strengthening that foundation so that they can walk there smoothly, so that when they pick that book up, they can be confident enough to finish it. But I make these observations, and they're very true. And teachers, so many teachers will co-sign what I'm saying. Like, I don't even got to talk about myself, because other teachers, they already talking about it. Talk to the English teachers that use my stuff. Like, talk to them. I guess the easy way for me to put it is, like, I'm trying to tell you to love reading and to love, you know, all of these different things, and a lot of students haven't even figured out how to love themselves yet. We're not drawing from the same thing that some other districts with more resources and more normalcy get to draw from. It's like a different animal.
Most definitely. So if you had all the money in the world, what would you do to change the Baltimore City Public Schools?
I would build exposure labs and mentor centers in every school so the kids can have different options. They put their education into context. They would be able to get an understanding of the different types of things they can do. They would be able to experiment with broadcast and art and, you know, being sports agents and all types of different career paths that we don't really see coming up. So I would build exposure labs in every school. I would require kids to take exposure labs. Right now we just group students based on age. I think people have more in common than their age. Definitely integrate art to the higher level. And I would double up on the teachers in the classrooms, and I would probably lessen the class sizes.
In your writing, you talk a lot about drug dealers, fiends, and police brutality, all circumstances you grew up around. You enrolled in college, dropped out, started selling drugs. So what got you back on track to finish at the University of Baltimore?
I felt like I just wanted to do something different with my life. You know, I was doing all these wild things, and none of those things made me happy. I just felt like I wanted to be able to do something different with my life. The street life, the deeper I got into the street life, the less glamorous it felt. And I just wanted to transition into something different.
Yeah, do you feel like the streets was like a emptiness, like a void that just absorbed you and sucked you in if you were to remain consumed by the streets?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like an a-hole, but I kind of outgrew everybody I was around. So, you know, some of the people I really loved and cared about, they died off or went to jail. Some of the other people just outgrew them. Like, they just wasn't saying anything. You know, it's just not stimulated, like, at all. Like, I'm, like, a very, very active thinker. I grew out of it, you know, and the material things, they didn't seem glamorous to me. And risking my life, it didn't add up. It just didn't seem like it was worth it.
Okay. In schools, we read stories that take place in Tennessee, Mississippi, and even Alabama. But in your books, we hear about Lexington Market, North Avenue, Baby Buckins, and Freddie Gray. Why do you think it's important for people to hear stories about lives that relate so closely to their own?
Because familiar information is very accessible. It makes students less intimidated. They can digest it easier while still developing those same critical thinking skills. When people say that, you know, culturally relevant material doesn't matter, what they don't realize is that material is culturally relevant to someone, just not black students in a place like Baltimore.
That's deep. I just applaud you, and I hope that, you know, the book that you come out with hit and inspire many others to turn away from their past and to become somebody prosperous. This is WYPR, Youth More Than Words radio station. I thank you for coming out, man.
Hey, no doubt, man. You got a copy of the cook-up?
A cook-up? Yeah, I actually have it in my bag.
Oh, you got? Okay, word. Yeah. Okay, I'll make sure.
Xavier, Miles, Denera, and Chanel report the show.
Johnny McCone and Jamila Krimple edit and produce More Than Words.
Thanks to Dr. Patterson and Miss Young from Frederick Douglass High School.
This special series is supported by grant funding from the Philip and Beryl Sachs Family Foundation.
Our theme music was produced by me, Xavier Plater.
To learn more about this series and to hear other students' stories, visit wypr.org/morethanwords.